The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
The topic that occurred to me to talk about tonight is letting go. And as I reflected on letting go, I thought, wow, there's a lot to talk about around letting go. And so I'm narrowing it down to the topic of letting go of reactivity. That's still a big topic, but I felt like I could, you know, create a little package of something to share with you around letting go of reactivity. There's a term in the Buddhist texts that a Pali term in the ancient language of the Buddha that basically is the word that means reactive emotion or something like that. The Pali term is kilesa. And it's often translated, I don't even think I want to tell you how it's often translated. Instead, I'll give you another perspective on it. Basically, kilesa, or these reactive emotions, are things that get in the way of our happiness, our peace, our ease in life. And so there's a text that talks about a whole bunch of these different kilesa, these different states of mind that get in the way, that obstruct or confuse the mind. And I thought I'd read some of this with this alternative translation for kilesa as being something like gets in the way of happiness and peace. Covetousness gets in the way of happiness and peace. Ill will gets in the way of happiness and peace. Anger gets in the way of happiness and peace. Hostility, denigration, domineering, envy, jealousy, hypocrisy, fraud, obstinacy, presumption, conceit, arrogance, vanity, and negligence. It's an amazing list of states of mind, reactive emotions. These emotions or these states of mind, because some of them may not seem so much like emotions, like hypocrisy may not seem so much like an emotion, or fraud may not seem so much like an emotion, but it's kind of an inclination or a way that the mind is kind of oriented to lie or to, like in fraud, to defraud somebody. Or hypocrisy, a kind of a state of mind in which we are holding a hypocritical perspective. So and in reading this list, you know, as I changed the language for myself around what kilesa means, using this framing of gets in the way of happiness and peace, I thought, yeah, some of these are pretty obvious. Like, you know, ill will gets in the way of happiness and peace. It's kind of obvious how ill will gets in the way of happiness and peace and how anger gets in the way of happiness and peace. We see in the very moment of being angry or having ill will that we are not happy and peaceful. Some of these others, like covetousness, this is an old word, actually. I looked up covetousness. You know, I know what it means. It means greedy, basically. But I also found out when I did this little research on covetousness, you know, it's amazing what you get on Google. You Google the word and you get a graph that says, you know, when was this word in frequent use? And it was in frequent use in the 1800s. And these days, it's not used hardly at all. And so it's kind of an old word, but basically it means greedy. It means desiring something, wanting something. Now that one might not be so clear necessarily about how it gets in the way of happiness and peace. Doesn't wanting something, I mean, that's our orientation, right? We want to get something to make us happy. We desire something and we act on it and we move in that direction in order to be happy. And so how does greed get in the way of happiness and peace? Well, this one's a little bit more, takes a little bit more reflection perhaps. When we first start to pay attention to our experience, we might begin to see that when we want something, as soon as we want something, as soon as want springs up in the mind, there's a feeling of lack. There's a feeling that, oh, I don't have something that I want. And so there's this kind of tipping forward or toppling forward, or a sense that there's a, even maybe just a very subtle problem here in this moment, because I don't have what I want in this moment, I have to do something to get it in a future moment. And yet this is so much of our orientation towards happiness, is doing something to get something in future moments. And yet what we are doing basically is, if we start to pay attention, bringing attention to what that experience of wanting is, what that experience of greed is, we do feel this feeling of lack of something being off in this very moment. And yet if we continue watching and we see what happens as we explore the greed, as we follow through on the greed, we get what we want. In the moment when we get what we want, you know, that feels pretty good. It feels like, yeah, I got the thing I wanted. And yet, there's something else that's happened there in that moment that we don't often see. So in the moment when we get what we want, we have a little bit of, maybe a little bit of happiness, or maybe more of a sense of relief, more than happiness, a sense of relief. Ah, I've gotten what I want. So there's a little bit of a sense of relief, or yes, I've got this thing that I wanted. But another thing that happens in that moment that is not so obvious is that in that moment, the wanting goes away. For just a moment, the wanting goes away. And I would like to propose to you that actually the biggest part of why it feels good to get what we want is because the wanting goes away. Now that's not obvious. That's not obvious until we really start feeling into what wanting is. And so essentially what we're doing when we're wanting something, when we're greedy for something, tumbling forward, trying to get the next thing that we want, is that we're giving up in this moment our well-being, our ease, our happiness, our peace. We're giving it up in this moment for the hope that some point in the future we'll get a little hit of relief. And so you don't have to believe me about this, but I'm just going to put that out there and propose to you that actually all of these states, in the moment of feeling them, all of these states have this quality of not being happy in the moment of experiencing them. Not being at ease, not having a sense of well-being. And so in a very real sense, in the present moment, when these states arise, and I'll read them again, covetousness, ill will, anger, hostility, denigration, domineering, envy, jealousy, hypocrisy, fraud, obstinacy, presumption, conceit, arrogance, vanity, and negligence. When they are happening in the moment, right then and there, we are separated from well-being and happiness. Right in that moment, we are separated from well-being and happiness. Sometimes there's a sense, another way that these kilesa, these states of mind, catch us and hook us, is that we have the belief or we have the sense that, well, you know, if I don't follow through on these things, if I don't follow through on greed, if I don't follow through on, you know, getting what I want or acting on what I think I need, and if I don't follow through on that, then I'm just going to be at the mercy of the world. If I don't follow through on my anger, I'm just going to be at the mercy of the world. And so we have that kind of attitude or belief that these reactive emotions are necessary to navigate a really challenging world. I'm not saying that the world is not challenging out there. And it's very natural, based on our history, for these reactive emotions to arise. When somebody says something that's hurtful, it's natural for anger or hurt or shame or any of a host of reactive emotions to arise when somebody says that. When somebody, so many different ways these emotions can arise. So it's very natural, given the way we have been living our lives, that these states would arise. And yet, I'd like to also propose to you, another thing I'd like to propose to you tonight, that these reactive emotions, the things, the way we think we have to be in order to navigate the world, the challenges of the world, actually get in the way of what possibly are skillful responses to the world instead of automatic reactions to the world. Skillful responses to the world can come from kindness and compassion and generosity and wisdom, as opposed to reacting out of habitual greed or anger or confusion. And so these states, not only do the states themselves get in the way of happiness and peace in the moment, but they also get in the way of navigating the world in a completely different way that brings more harmony, more peace, more love into the world. And so understanding, even at a level of thoughtful reflection, understanding that reactive emotions, and another way to look at what reactive emotions are, at their core, these reactive emotions are states of mind that are based in greed, wanting something, wanting to have something that you don't have, in aversion, in wanting to get rid of something that's here that you don't want, or in delusion, in confusion, in confused or filters of how we perceive the world that are not accurately representative of how the world really is. And so these states of mind based in greed, aversion, and delusion, understanding that they're in the way of happiness and peace, and having an interest in experiencing happiness and peace, then there might be the interest in exploring how might we let these go? How might we let go of these reactive emotions? How might that be possible? And so, you probably, you're all familiar enough with your own minds to recognize it's not easy to just simply stop an emotion that's in process. No, it's not that you can just say, oh, I now see this isn't so helpful. This is in the way of ease and peace. I think I'll stop feeling anger right now. You know, it doesn't work that way. So it takes practice. It takes, what does it mean to practice letting go? And so this is some of what I'd like to explore with you tonight. In my own, and this is very much from my own experience in my own practice. There's different, kind of two broad approaches to letting go. The words letting go, or in the text that I was referring to, quoting a little while ago, the phrase is understanding these are states that get in the way of happiness and peace. One abandons them. That's the word that's used. One abandons these states. And, you know, again, the word abandoning, kind of like letting go, it sounds like it's something we're doing. It sounds like, you know, okay, I can stop doing that. I can let that go. I can put that down. But, it just doesn't quite work that way. There are times that an active practice or an active exploration of letting go is possible and helpful. So there's these two broad ways towards letting go. One being a kind of active approach where we're trying to do something to turn the corner, to turn that battleship of reactivity, to let it go, at least to not be caught so deeply in it. Now, that's kind of a set of active practices that are possible. And then there's a set of what I'll call receptive practices that are more about opening to the experiences of these states of mind, being with them, being mindful of them. So I'm going to start. Looking at these two together, in my own practice, what I've seen is that the active practices, the ones where we're actually saying, you know, okay, yep, anger's happening right here. This is not helpful. I need to do something. Those practices are useful when the mind is pretty caught or stuck by something. When you feel like, yeah, wow, you know, it's not very easy to just be present for something. You're not able to be mindful of that state of mind without just like getting caught right back into it again. At one point in my practice, I talk a lot about working with anger. So it was my first meditation project. It was my first mindfulness project, and I watched my anger a lot. And I got familiar with, you know, being able to be, you know, notice the anger, be present for it. And at some point I recognized there was a particular time in my life, particular set of conditions going, when I tried to be mindful of the anger. And what would happen is almost instantly, you know, within moments of saying, oh, here's anger, let me be present for this anger. Let me notice how it is in the body. Let me feel. Within moments of trying to be mindful of it, I was just right back in the anger again. You know, I was screaming in my mind at the person I was angry with and, you know, bemoaning what a sorry state I was in, you know, just. The mind was caught again within moments. And so at some point I realized, it took a while actually, it probably took a few weeks before I realized, hey, you know, it's not working very well to be mindful of this right now. Maybe I need to try something else. So the mindfulness practice is basically the receptive side. And if we can't be mindful, if we find ourselves caught back in our struggle, in our reactivity again, some of these active practices may be helpful. Another time that it might be helpful to use an active practice is if we're in a kind of a dangerous situation, a situation in which we're likely to cause harm or be harmed. You know, if you're in a situation in which you're likely to cause harm or be harmed, do something. Don't just sit there and go, things as they are. You know, oh, somebody's running out into the street. A child is running out into the street. Oh, fear, fear. That's not so helpful. Taking action may be absolutely what's required, even if there is a reactivity around what's going on. And so, you know, knowing when to use active practices and when to use the receptive practices can be really helpful. And it will vary during your, it'll vary day to day even, depending on, you know, whether you've gotten enough rest or had enough food or have had an argument with somebody the day before. There's so many conditions that come into play that make it more or less difficult to be present and mindful using the receptive tools. And so I'd like to explore both some active practices and some receptive practices with you, starting with the active ones. So the active ones are when we feel like, yeah, this is hard. This particular reactive emotion, I'm pretty caught by this. A first tool would be something along the lines of, okay, seeing that you're really caught by a particular state of mind, choosing to put something else into your mind that's more wholesome. So, for instance, if you're caught in a lot of anger in a moment, you could play with or explore. So you're angry at a particular person. You could play with or explore, instead of thinking those angry thoughts, consciously bring in thoughts of well-wishing for that person. Now, this may work best if it's not like somebody you're like really, really enraged with, and it's somebody you also have a connection with. I mean, a partner, for instance, you know, they've done something that's made you angry, but you've got this whole like history of well-wishing behind you. You know, just to remind yourself, yes, there is this anger. This isn't about repression. This is one of the keys around some of these active pieces. You know, it's more like, okay, yep, that's there. I'm not going to deny that anger is there. But also there is this well-wishing for this person. I do want this person to be happy. I do want this person to be safe. So it's like replacing the thoughts. Rather than letting the thoughts run rampant in the mode of that reactive emotion. You know, when we let the thoughts run rampant, it's actually reinforcing, fueling that pattern, that habitual pattern. And so if we can replace those thoughts with more wholesome thoughts, you know, it's kind of hard to think two thoughts at the same time, two different thoughts at the same time. And so if you can consciously bring thoughts of well-wishing, generosity, compassion into your mind, that kind of replace the mode of that reactivity. So that's one tool, replacing the thoughts. Now, for myself, this particular form took a very long time for me to be able to sign up to this one. You know, especially doing metta, I found it to be, you know, I have a proclivity towards aversion. This mind oriented from very young age towards seeing things that it didn't like and wanting to get rid of them in order to find happiness. And so that was well practiced in my mind. And one of the key teachings in the suttas, and a lot of teachers say, you ought to try metta practice. That is the traditional antidote for an aversive mind. And I tried metta practice, and it just like made the aversion even worse. And so for myself, this particular practice, I could not do this particular practice for quite a long time. I'd say it was, when was it? I know exactly when it was. It was in the year 2000. So I started practicing in 96. So it was 4 years into my practice before I could turn towards metta as an antidote for my anger. So what I did find helpful instead was a second approach, which is basically change the channel. So anger's coming up, put my attention in something else that's neutral. This one served me for a really long time. When I saw that my reactive emotions were so strong that I couldn't be mindful of them, the tool that worked really, really well for me was to turn my attention to something in experience that was happening that was neutral. To me, making the leap to metta, to wishing someone well, it was kind of like my mind went, this anger's over here, and you're trying to wish somebody well over here. It's like, you know, these two don't coexist very well. You know, the anger part was going, you know, you're trying to shut me down. And so it was too much conflict in the mind. And yet, going from having that reactivity to, pay attention to something neutral. And in that movement from reactivity to something neutral, I kind of like would have a conversation with that part of my mind and say, yep, I see you're there. I see you want some attention. But right now, it doesn't work very well to pay attention. So I'm going to pay attention to something neutral over here. I'm not going to try to stop you. You can be there. It's kind of like you can sit in the room with me, but I'm not going to pay attention to you. It's kind of like ignoring. It's changing the channel and ignoring. But not repressing. Not repressing. That was really, really effective for working with some of these out-of-control reactive emotions. It gave the reactive emotion some sense of being met, of being seen, of not being denied, of being not being repressed. And yet it also gave the mind a break. Just put your attention in like feet on the ground or the experience of hearing, just something happening in the present moment that's pretty neutral. In my own experience, I found paying attention to the breathing at that point was not so helpful. Breathing may be, for some people, a kind of a neutral experience, but with a lot of these reactive emotions, the breathing is engaged with the emotions. When we're angry, our breath is altered. When we're frustrated, there's an alteration to how the breathing is happening. And so turning to the breathing, for me, just kind of like reminded me of the emotion. So for me, it was really helpful not to pick actually anything in the kind of core of the body. This area from, you know, your mouth down to your intestines gets really engaged in reactive emotions. There's contraction in the stomach and tightness in the intestines and squeezing in the throat and constriction in the muscles around the chest or pressure and heat in this area. There's a lot of feelings that happen in this area when we're experiencing reactive emotion. And for me, I found, you know, that abandoning or letting go was supported by turning towards some experience that was on the periphery of my experience. Sensations of the hand, they're pretty. If your hands are like this, you can kind of consciously relax them, feeling your feet on the ground. if you can connect to the experience of hearing, that can be pretty neutral at times. So turning away from the reactivity. So these tools actively, it's kind of an active letting go, you know, active saying, I'm not going to pay attention to this, I'm going to pay attention to that, in both of these two. I'm not going to pay attention to this reactive emotion, I'm going to consciously think wholesome thoughts. Or I'm not going to pay attention to this reactive emotion, I'm going to put my attention in something neutral. This begins to support the mind to let go of its hooks into that reactive emotion. Many of the hooks into the reactive emotion are in the realm of our thoughts. And so if we can turn away from the thoughts and put our attention elsewhere, that can be a very powerful tool for letting go of these reactive emotions. And so this is a form, an active form of turning away from. What I found most helpful, as I said a few minutes ago, it's kind of like let it stay in the room. Let that reactive emotion stay in the room. And just, you know, it's like you don't have to look at it. It's kind of like giving it a timeout, you know. It's like let it sit in the corner and, you know, you put your attention over here. Now, there are times that a more powerful kind of active process may be needed. And that might be in the situation where there's some kind of danger going to happen. You know, if you see or if you find that some reactive emotion is either putting you in danger or putting someone else in danger, if you need to repress that emotion, that's okay. You know, if you need to say, look, I need to get out of here, I cannot feel this emotion right now. If it would just take you over the edge into not even a physically dangerous situation, but maybe even a mentally dangerous situation. One person I know had a lot of work around depression, and this person would get caught into the depression, and the depression would just rule. And on one retreat, she began to see that she had some choice, but it took a lot of will, that she could see like the beginning, the beginning threads of the depression starting to come up. And it just took this like, no, I am not going to go there. That kind of very firm no. And that no may be coming out of some sense of aversion. But it is also probably connected with some sense of well-wishing for yourself and for others. Like in the case of saying no to causing harm or danger, it may be that you have to kind of push down or repress that kind of automatic movement or that automatic urge. But there's also in there, and maybe you can connect to this, the wholesome urge to not harm, the wholesome urge to not be overwhelmed. And so you may be able to connect to a motivation of compassion along with that, you know, that sense of no. There's also this sense of why that no is a good idea in this moment. in any of these practices, in any of these active practices, there, you know, we're probably gonna have from time to time in working with some of these challenging reactive emotions, there probably is going to be some aversion. And we may be acting out of that aversion at times. Sometimes these active practices can contain some aversion, and yet it's kind of we have to kind of learn to recognize when that is that aversion helping us to let go of something. It's like it maybe is a subtler form of aversion that's helping us to avoid a greater form of reactivity. So our practice can have this kind of staged, like stair-step approach that, you know, we see where we're caught. We see that we're caught by something, and we recognize, you know, that caught is big. That's a big thing I'm caught by. Being enraged with somebody. I'm really caught by that. And maybe there's a little bit of aversion to that being enraged. And a little bit of aversion in the sense of, I'm going to try to put my attention in something else. But the movement of that little bit of aversion is helping us let go of a bigger reactivity. And fortunately, this practice is, sometimes Gil says it's self-correcting. And so at some point, you know, the way I've seen these, like, it's like layers and layers of reactive emotions in the way our minds are put together. You know, and we have these big reactivities, and, you know, the big reactivities, we may have to have some active practices to begin to let those go. But as those begin to let go, as those begin to release, and we aren't so whipped around by the big storms anymore, there's kind of maybe a time when it's like, oh, you know, things are much less problematic right now. You know, we may start to see, yeah, that person says something, and I'm not like going into a frozen rage anymore. I'm more just like irritated, or, you know, just maybe a little frustrated. And so we start to see how certain large forms of reactivity have been released, have been let go. And for a while it feels like things are pretty good, or things are feeling much better. And then, because we are in this, you know, practice, and we're noticing what's going on, and we're noticing what our minds are doing, we start to see quieter, subtler ways that we're reacting. Like that frustration, like that irritation. That too is a reactive emotion. A little bit of pushing away of frustration is felt more as, oh, that I feel that. I feel the suffering of that aversion right there. And so one thing I like to suggest for people is let suffering be your guide as to what to pay attention to and how to pay attention. You know, the big reactivities, they're kind of really obviously suffering. Work with those. Some of those might start to fall away over time. And then we start to feel some of these smaller things as, oh, that feels a little off too. Okay, let me work with that one now. And that's kind of how it's self-correcting. So any subtle kind of aversion that was cultivated in letting go of the larger reactivity, at some point, you'll have to look at that too. You'll experience, you'll see, you'll feel, oh yeah, when I like, if frustration arises and it's like, oh, don't go front, oh, that feels worse than the frustration. Maybe I can actually open to the frustration. Maybe I don't have to be averse to the frustration. And this takes me to the more receptive practices, the practice of mindfulness with reactive emotions. This is basically turning towards the reactivity itself. You know, you're experiencing anger, frustration, covetousness, envy, jealousy, hypocrisy, obstinacy, all of these, any of these. What this receptive practice suggests is it's not about passivity. I mean, I'm really careful not to say active practice and passive practices. It's not about passivity. There's an active form, there's an activity of mind that's engaged here. And the it's not about just passively like, oh yeah, I'm angry, you know, I'm going to really feel this anger, you know, get into this anger. The movement here is to turn towards the experience of the reactivity itself. So there's something out in the world that is creating a condition or a situation about which you're angry. And the receptive practice is about letting go of the attention to the thing in the world that's creating the situation that makes you angry, and instead turning towards, this is what it likes to be a person that's feeling anger. When I first heard that instruction, it mystified me. I was like, how on earth is that going to do any good? What is that going to do? Isn't that just going to make me more angry to feel the experience of anger? But to my surprise, actually, no, it didn't. Because what this turning away from the source of the anger does, it's kind of like that redirecting we talked about a minute ago, where it's like, here's the anger, I'm going to put my attention on something neutral. It's like taking the attention out of the thing that you're angry about and turning your attention to the experience of anger itself, or whatever reactive emotion it is, turning the attention to that reactivity itself. Well, it does two things. It helps us to kind of decouple from the thing that is generating the reactivity, and it encourages us to be with the actual felt sense of the reactivity rather than being caught in all of the thoughts about the reactivity. So those two pieces are very powerful. Those two pieces of just decouple and turn towards the experience. This movement of shifting to basically be mindful of the reactive emotion, it doesn't necessarily mean that that reactive emotion is going to go away right away. But it is a form of letting go. It is a form of letting go in that we've let go of being hooked into the thing that's cycling, that we're reacting to. We have let go of that. We've also turned towards the experience of the reactivity, letting go of the thoughts, letting go of the way the mind is spinning around the reactivity. So those are two forms of letting go that are happening. And then what happens? And what I've seen over and over again in my own practice is that when it's like we've let go, we've decoupled decoupled from the thing and we've turned towards the experience. It's kind of like disengaging the gears of whatever is creating that reactivity. You know, if you are in a car and you're traveling, you've got your foot on the accelerator and you're traveling 60 miles an hour down the freeway. Those gears are engaged. You've got your foot on the gas. You're fueling that movement. And that's kind of what's happening when we've got our attention in the situation and our thinking thoughts. We've got our foot on the gas pedal. We are fueling that reactive emotion. And so disengaging, turning towards the experience, is like putting the car into neutral. We disengage the gears. We disengage the forward momentum. We're no longer giving it gas. And what happens on a car? If you take a car that's traveling 65 miles an hour down the freeway and put it into neutral, does it stop immediately? No, it's got this momentum. But you know it will come to a stop because you're no longer giving it the gas. And this is how this kind of letting go supports us in releasing from these reactive emotions. It's kind of an organic process. We let go of the thing that's fueling it, and we watch it kind of slowly unwind. In the process of watching it slowly unwind, our mind gets a really good education about what it feels like to be in that state. And as I said at the very beginning, you know, these things don't feel good. You know, you're in the midst of feeling this reactive emotion. When you turn with mindfulness to it, you get the direct, visceral understanding. This is not the way to happiness and well-being. The mind gets that signal loud and clear. And as that unwinds, as the momentum of that reactivity slows down, sometimes we can actually watch the whole process unwind and slow down. Often what happens in this unwinding process is it's like we take our foot off the gas for a few seconds, and then we put the gas back on, and then we take the foot off, and then we put it back on. Sometimes we can actually, you know, watch the process of the unwinding and not put our foot back on the gas pedal, and we can see it let go. See what it feels like when that reactivity ends. And in that moment, there's a visceral understanding of release, of this is a different kind of well-being. This is a different way to well-being. I have 1 minute. I think I will say this one piece. Because for me, this is a really interesting piece around this receptive practice of mindfulness. I'll describe this through example. This is something I've been seeing lately. So, waking up in the morning, I have a lot of things that are going on in my life right now. A lot of teaching, a lot of activities, and pretty quickly when I wake up, the mind is tumbling. It feels like it's tumbling forward like this. Like I wake up and it's already tumbling. And so as soon as I see that, it's like, okay, here it is. Here's this tumbling that's happening. And what is often accompanies that tumbling, that sense of gotta do this, is a belief that it believes that it's important to do those things. So there's along with these reactive emotions, it's sometimes interesting to check into what is being believed here. What's being believed? It could be something very simple, as in this kind of tumbling forward. It's like, yeah, I do have all these things to do. Well, that's true. I have all these things to do. Things stacked up, things to take care of. I have all these things to do. But there's a way in which not only is that piece true, but there's a way in which the mind is buying into the state of mind that I have to be tumbling like this in order to take care of those things. When that's seen, that's like, it's so ludicrous to see or to recognize. It's just so, it's ridiculous to think, for the mind to believe that this immediate tumbling into kind of this feeling hurtling through space is gonna be effective in this moment. I mean, it's like, I'm not doing anything right now. I'm lying in bed. This can be released. This can be, there's no need to believe this state of mind is important in this moment. So that reflection on what is this reactive emotion, what belief is this reactive emotion rooted in, can be an interesting reflection that for me has supported this letting go. So, sorry, there's no time for comments or questions. I hope it was helpful. Thank you.